That Great Business Show, Ireland's best business podcast.
Welcome to episode 149 of That Great Business Show, where we bring you all the great tips, insights, and some unique business opportunities, all perfectly packaged into 45 minutes, with thanks to Dundeal.ie. I'm Conal O'Mora in Fáilte Isteach. On this episode, we have an agri-tech startup whose business is weighing cattle, but curiously, they've been part-funded by the European Space Agency. So we'll be asking some questions about that. And on the subject of startups, we're talking about the need for updated incentives to keep our small startup sector attracting the right talent. All our tips and insights are brought to you thanks to Dundeal Motors, the place to look for your new or previously loved car, van or truck. Dundeal.ie.
Dundeal Motors is home to Ireland's largest range of new and premium used cars. That's why you'll find cars from Audi and BMW dealerships on Dundeal. Are you looking for a 7-seater to accommodate your growing family? Maybe you're after a luxury saloon to make a statement. We have the car for you. You'll also find Ireland's largest range of electric cars to help you make the switch. Visit Dundeal.ie today to start the search for your next car.
Viscosity. When you shave, you want the highest viscosity because it helps the blade run smoother. DeFacto, the world's best shaving oil, has incredible viscosity. That's why DeFacto leaves your face, underarms or legs nick-free. Higher viscosity makes blades last longer. DeFacto is the best for your skin and your pocket. DeFactoShave.com.
Strongbow, an Irish agri-tech startup, has raised €750,000 in seed funding so as the company can commercialise its automatic animal weighing device that the founders say is set to revolutionise the beef production sector. The company is based at Nova UCD in Dublin, having previously been funded by the European Space Agency, which I found most curious. But here to explain all is Strongbow's co-founder, Ivan Walrap. Ivan, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Hi, Conal. Thanks a million for having me on.
How or why or what European Space Agency?
Yeah, look.
And you maybe go back one step, actually. What do? You weigh animals.
Essentially, yeah. Look, our goal is to optimize beef farming with data-driven decision support tools. Now, that's a bit of a mouthful, but essentially what we're saying is extracting data from the beef production process and then changing it into a kind of a friendly format for farmers to make better decisions. But to the European Space Agency...
Well, no, sorry, just on this, yeah. Because go back on the machine that you're using.
Yeah.
Did I see a photograph of it? Does it look like a weighing scale for animals?
Absolutely, sorry. So there is a hardware aspect and there's a software aspect to our product. So
on your website, there is a machine and it looks... For all intents and purposes, like a weighing machine,
scales. It's essentially a weighing platform that's kind of semi-enclosed on three sides, and there's a trough in the middle.
Aha, I spotted that. And is that, do you put some feed in and the moo cow goes in and has a chomp?
Exactly. Well, so that's where the incentive goes. But at the moment, farmers are using kind of a salt lick, so essentially a big block of salt or a mineral lick or else some molasses. And that kind of attracts the animals of their own accord up onto the device. And when they're up there, we identify which animal it is via a tag in its ear. And then we just take hundreds and hundreds of weight readings and all of that gets sent up to the cloud.
And this is solving a problem, I understand, because at the moment it's done by the eye. Is that correct?
Well, I guess like you can take a step further back from the problem. And, you know, we hear farmers saying again and again, they know the weights of the animals when they buy them. They know the weights when they sell them, but they don't have a huge amount of visibility in between. Now, farmers do weigh their animals, but, you know, it's hugely labor intensive. It's very dangerous. And, you know, you're taking one weight every couple of weeks, potentially.
How do you weigh a cow or a beef cattle?
If you do it manually, you have to usher them up onto essentially a large scales. And you have to ask them, try and get them to stay still for a couple of seconds. And then you have to manually write down the data.
And does a farmer have one of those weighing scales? Does he or she borrow it or hire it?
Both. A lot of places would have them, but you certainly can rent them.
And how come nobody has thought of this before, what you're doing?
Well, there actually are a couple of competitors around the world.
So I thought that you've just joined up with one of them.
And well, we joined up with one of our co-founders out. And, well, I'm not sure if you're talking about Gallagher now.
The guy in Hamilton.
That's one of our co-founders, Marty Metzger. Mm-hmm. A bit of a long story, but kind of in the middle there, we kind of spread our wings out across the Atlantic. So Michal, my co-founder, is actually based out there now. And we were testing on a farm out there. And, you know, out in the corner of the shed there, Michal kind of saw another device that looked very similar to ours and was kind of like, oh, what's
Isn't that?
What's
unbelievable?
That
unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. So
like, it happened like that.
Absolutely, yeah. And then we kind of got introduced to Marty. So Marty Metzger is a vet. He runs a very large veterinary business in Canada. And this was something he was just doing on the side. And, you know, we got talking, kind of, we got along very well, realized that, you know, together we could push this a lot further.
And go back now with the drum roll to the space agency.
The space agency, yeah.
Well, I'm kind of almost speechless. I'm never speechless, but how come the space agency got involved with you?
Yeah, look, people always laugh. I usually say cows of the moon when people say it. But so essentially our device, when it collects all the data, how it's currently sending that data to the cloud is it's using the cellular network. So essentially the same as your phone and how it connects to the internet. And, you know, where the stage we're at now, that's perfect. You know, we can deal with farms that have cellular connectivity. But as we start to look into new regions around the world, there's plenty of remote places where there's just no cellular network, you know. So at the moment, farmers, we have to kind of ask farmers, do they have cellular connection where they want to put their machine? And working with the European Space Agency, we're developing satellite communications.
Ah.
So our device can be put anywhere in the world. Yes. And as long as it has line of sight to the sky, all our data will be able to go up to the cloud.
And would you use Starlink there? Or
you're very close. Another company called Swarm. And it was actually it was actually acquired by, I think, by Starlink.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so.
Which is in turn is owned by...
Well, I think
Elon Musk. I just by chance saw that they have just put Starlink up into Kenya. If you need to be in the middle of Kenya with your device, so you have, because your own PR says so, you're going to revolutionize the business. That's a big claim.
That's a big claim. Look, and really, like what we're able to do is like we're able to give so much visibility to the farmers. So we're able to give them what the weight of the group of animals that it's with, what it is, how they're performing, whether they're growing or not growing. And then it goes down to the individual. So what weights are all the individuals and how is each individual performing? And essentially what that allows the farmer to do is it allows him to sell the animals at exactly the right time. And if you can sell the animal at exactly the right time, you make more money, you reduce your costs, and essentially you can actually reduce your environmental emissions of the animals. And then there's also an animal welfare aspect to that as well. So we saw back in early testing that, you know, every now and then you'd see an animal whose weight would suddenly take a bit of a nosedive. And, you know, we quickly realized that this, we originally first thought that maybe there was something wrong with the machine, but it wasn't. It was sick animals. And, you know, that's hugely important that farmers can see illness as it's happening and choose to intervene so the farmer can go down, have a look at the animals, and whether that intervention is call a vet or potentially segregate an animal to stop any potential illness spreading. So that's another huge thing.
I thought that the farmers could now put a kind of a necklace around the cow now and find out if they're ill or not. No?
Absolutely, yeah. There are lots of on-animal devices as well. And, you know, you can absolutely do that. But you've got one device per animal then, you know. But it does tell you a lot. It can tell you activity, kind of temperature, huge amount, you know, whereas our device, you know, you can put it in, we've had it in with groups of up to 200-300 animals, you know, and when it's in with a group that big, there's an animal standing on it 75% of the day, you know, which is kind of crazy to think about it. And like it gets to the stage where we can actually see animals like coming up multiple times throughout the day. And, you know, you might catch him in the morning when he's empty, you know, and then he drinks and eats all day. So we actually see a sawtooth effect. And when you manually weigh an animal, you're only taking a one snapshot, you know. So you could be plus or minus 20 kgs on like a 500-600 kg animal. So you might think he's that weight, but that's because he's full or because he's empty, you know. So when you're doing it all the time, you really have your finger on the pulse of what's going on.
When or how did Ivan Wahlberg get involved with cattle or get interested in the weight of cattle?
Yeah, how far do you want me to go back? Well, originally, look, I'm a mechanical engineer. So
that explains nothing.
Explains nothing. I didn't have a clue what I wanted to do when I was doing my Leaving Cert. Went to UCD, did mechanical engineering. And then I went down to work in medical device industry in Cork. And that's where I met my co-founder, Micheál McInerney. So Micheál is a South Galway man, comes from a beef farming background. And before we knew each other anyway, one day on the farm, I think it was 2015, he basically saw this problem that, you know, his dad didn't really know what was going on with the bulls that he had. So he went into the shed, threw some steelwork together and a bit of electronics. And he'd made their essentially the first prototype of our device. And he had it in with the animals. And once a week, he'd go out and pull out the USB stick. He'd bring it into the computer, put it in, pull all the data into Excel, manually start sorting through it and figuring it all out. So he was just manually doing all the software piece and then kind of giving recommendations to his dad. So Micheál and I worked together for 3 years when I was down in Cork. And then I decided to come back to Dublin to do computer science. So I didn't have the big change on my LinkedIn, you know, mechanical engineer to software engineer. But anyway, when I was back in Dublin, Micheál, we were chatting one day and we kind of said, look, we'd love to start our own thing, you know, threw around some crazy ideas. Some of them were nuts. And then, you know, we said, look, what if we tried to build a business around the device in a shed, you know, one of the devices in a shed, you know, he had a lot of them. And I was in the perfect place. Well, I was a month into my computer science master's, you know, I didn't have a clue how to do all the data, but I was in the perfect place for it. You know, so he had the hardware and a little bit of electronics. And then it was my job to figure out how do we get the data off the device, pass it through a big pipeline of analysis onto graphs and websites and logins and phone app. And, you know, that's kind of where we started.
And today, Ireland, but tomorrow, very much so, the world.
That's it, exactly.
What have you got in the pipeline? And also, the 750,000, you got that from some interesting people as well, or interesting companies.
Yeah, look, the investment is, it's game-changing for us. Like, the lead investor was Gallagher, amazing company based out of New Zealand.
How did you come across them?
We were actually pitching for investment to another company based in Canada. Well, they're not only based in Canada, a very large company, I won't say the name, but they weren't investing in startups at the time, but they essentially said, look, we're not interested, but I know someone who might be interested.
Oh, that's very kind of them. That's very good. Yeah,
absolutely. Cool. So they kind of passed us on to Gallagher and we started the courting business, you know.
How long did that go on for?
It probably took the guts of a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, people tell you investment takes a long time, but until you've been through it, like I knew it, but until you've been through it, I think
every day waiting for the phone call.
And that's it.
Today, it could be today. It could be today. No, tomorrow.
That's it. So Gallagher, lead investor, and then we're backed by Enterprise Ireland alongside that. Enterprise Ireland have been great. They've kind of been with us all along. And then three parties in Canada. So Grand River Agricultural Society, 519 Growth Fund, and then a private investor.
And you obviously, when you're pitching to Gallagher's and the rest of them, you had to tell them how big the vision was. So how big is the vision? What are the dollar signs? What
look,
do they look
it's
like?
Huge. Like if you look at the total available market, you know, it's hundreds of billions, you know.
Billions?
Yes, absolutely billions. When you think about, because if you can, like the farms we're on out in Canada now, like there's thousands and thousands of animals, you know, and if you can make a 1% difference on those animals, you know, and we're hoping to make a lot more than a 1% difference, but if you can make a 1% difference, you can change the game for them, you know.
And how much of a difference can you make?
Well, you know, basing off putting our device in with maybe 150 animals and doing that four times a year, you can get a return on the price of the device within a year if you actually use it correctly.
And that's kind of my next question is, do they people buy this machine or do you rent it or do you lease it or what do you do?
Yeah, so the current business model is that there is a hardware sale. So you buy the physical device.
Where are they made? Or where will they be made?
Well, for the Ireland and Europe, they're made up in County Louth. Okay. And then they're also made in Ontario and Canada.
Okay.
At the moment.
And but logistically, of course, Micheál, you said, is now in States
now,
or is
he Canada? He's in Hamilton in Ontario.
It's a big Irish community, I gather, over in Hamilton.
Yeah, he loves it out there, yeah.
And it's a bit cold, though.
Well, a bit cold and then a bit nice in the summer as well.
So did I see that it goes to minus 40?
Yeah, look, honestly, when we moved, we thought we had a rugged machine when we left Ireland, you know. But when you put a device into a feedlot in Canada and you're dealing with minus 40 to plus 30 and 800 kg animals bashing off it all day, every day, you really understand what it's like to build a machine that'll last, you know. It's the toughest environment you can put a device in the world.
Actually, you're teaching me again and again and again, and I love that. So what's the future, the immediate future? What do you need from anybody or anything? Do you need to spread the word to Irish farmers? Or do you, what about the UK? I mean, next door neighbours?
Yeah, absolutely. We've had sent devices out to the UK. So kind of at the moment, we're focusing on kind of Ireland, Europe, and then simultaneously kind of North America. And
that's a lot. How many of you are there?
Until a few months ago, there was three of us, three co-founders. Since we've got the investment, we've just hired two people and about to hire a third person here in Ireland.
Okay, so, but when you keep saying you're a co-founder, Marty has a real job as well, doesn't he?
Marty has a real job as well.
So he's, you have two and a half, kind of.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So I'm still trying to think of, trying to understand, are you going to manufacture a whole heap of things up in Louth and then ship them to the UK or Germany or wherever, whoever take them? Or like, there's so only so many hours in the day.
Yeah, essentially, like Micheál has done a lot of the mechanical design, and the mechanical design is amazing. Like, you saw the picture online, it's a big hunk of metal, but he's managed to design it so that for shipping, it folds down into a tiny little box.
Okay, and again, never thought of that.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I guess the goal then is when we go out to further regions, you know, we've sent devices now out to Australia, New Zealand, and the idea there will be to set up regional hardware, because essentially we've a set of drawings now, you know, for the hardware, and then we'll control the little electronics box and the brain, you know.
And all of these devices can be adapted for other uses, so you must be thinking about beyond moo cows or beyond beef cattle. What are you thinking?
Oh, look, Micheál, it's part of the problem with Micheál and myself. Like, we're have a million ideas in one, you know, and we're just trying to stay focused. And, you know, at least when we, now that we have the investment, we have a very clear plan of how we're going to scale. And, you know, I'll keep quiet about our further R&D
problems. No, there's nobody listening. Just tell me. You're obviously extremely excited about what's happening.
I'm very excited. Look, data, you know, that's where the power is.
And timely reminder that this all started in 2015.
Yep.
So it's a long time bubbling up.
It is, yeah. You know, now he built the first device in 2015. His dad was using it away. And it really wasn't until 2019 where we kind of kicked it into first gear, I guess. You know, the two of us started actively working on it together.
And the name is Strongbow. Who came up with that brilliant?
Oh, my lovely wife came up with
father,
that one.
Strong B.O. Father.
Yeah, my lovely wife came up with that name. I have to give her credit there.
Well, tell her she's a genius because it's just a lovely, lovely name.
Thank you.
And of course, it's wasted on the Canadians probably.
You know, it was easy to get the domain. It's very hard to come up with a business name nowadays, you know, because you come up with something and if it's not just letters mashed together, someone's bought the domain and is sitting on the Twitter account and the whole lot, you know.
Yeah. So you got all of the above. Good.
That's it.
Final question, Ivan. Yep. Who would you hire in a heartbeat? Sounds like Michael Micheál McInerney sounds like one of them anyway.
Oh, absolutely. Well, yeah. Look, if Micheál wasn't working for us, I'd hire him. Man's a genius. I'd hire Dr. Fiona Edwards-Murphy. She's the founder of a company in Cork called APs Protect. Amazing company. Also an IoT, Internet of Things company. And, you know, they're trying to do something very similar to what we're doing. It's essentially a small sensor device that goes into beehives and collects lots of data. That data again gets analyzed and presented back to the customer to make decisions on. So a very kind of similar overlook in general now, with very small sensor on in their company, very large sensor in our company. But where we're at the tens of devices. Like I said, we've sent devices to the UK, devices in Canada, Ireland. We've just sent our first ones to New Zealand and Australia. And now this investment is to turn those tens into hundreds and then thousands, you know. And Dr. Fiona Edwards-Murphy has made a very successful business and has scaled it, you know, scaled an Internet of Things business. So that's why I'd
have to ask, did she do
a B round in funding. That's terrible, isn't it?
Oh, well, we're not there yet.
Take me out and shoot me. Ivan, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show. And do please come back when you are going to tell me about what are all of the other great big ideas that yourself and Michal have. I love it. I think this is brilliant.
So thanks
for joining us.
Thanks a million, Conal. Thank you.
Dundeal Motors is home to Ireland's largest range of new and premium used cars. That's why you'll find cars from Audi and BMW dealerships on Dundeal. Are you looking for a 7-seater to accommodate your growing family? Maybe you're after a luxury saloon to make a statement. We have the car for you. You'll also find Ireland's largest range of electric cars to help you make the switch. Visit dundeal.ie today to start the search for your next car.
All That Great Business Show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
Now, many early stage companies have told me that the Key Employee Engagement Program, better known by its acronym KEEP, was never good enough to attract and keep employees, as a much better UK scheme could be had by just popping over the border into Northern Ireland. Now, with the downturn in valuations at most tech companies, those incentives are worth even less. So with a budget looming, now is a great time to revisit this essential scheme. But of course, our Department of Finance is no fan of tax incentives. Grit Young is strategy and transactions partner with EY Ireland, and she's here to tell me what can be done to help struggling startups. Grit Young, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you, Conal. Great to be here.
What do you know about KEEP? Because KEEP is not good enough to keep, isn't that right?
So I actually spend most of my career in the UK. And so you alluded to the UK incentive program for startups, which is EMI, which is the employee incentive scheme. And essentially what I understand, and I'm not a tax expert, is that first of all,
because we didn't want any tax experts.
Good. The tax incentives are not as favorable. But also I think there is quite a lot of admin involved in actually getting a KEEP scheme up and running, whereas I think, so I'm a valuations expert, certainly on the EMI side. It helps that startups and employees can get certainty over valuation. They do have to do valuations, but the UK government will make sure that they will agree to them. And then once the valuations are agreed and issued to employees, there's actually much more certainty for businesses as well as their staff.
And therefore, the UK scheme is used. And from what I understand, the Irish scheme is not used. It's tiny take up, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. It is. We do advise some companies, but it's certainly not used as often. And when you think about, in the US as well, the US government is very good at incentivizing employee ownership. I think there is a general recognition both in the US and the UK that employee ownership is beneficial to companies, employees, helping companies grow, which in turn helps create more jobs and it helps the economy and society as well.
And they get better results and they keep their staff longer, they attract better staff and the benefits are enormous. I'm very familiar with it. However, our Department of Finance, our government, our politicians don't seem to be terribly interested in encouraging this kind of stuff.
Yeah, so I think that's probably potentially, the UK, US is slightly ahead of the curve here, because at the end of the day, in Ireland, the startup community and the technology community is thriving, but it's probably, less mature and has started later. I think there is hopefully a desire by the government to actually relook at that and incentivize, because at the end of the day, you'll have great entrepreneurs here. Entrepreneurs in Ireland tend to look at export much more quickly than, a US startup, because you have to.
Enterprise Ireland won't give you any money unless that you do look off the island, as we say. Yeah. But what would you like? What would you encourage the government and or the authorities to do? We should be class leaders at this. We should be way ahead of anybody else.
So I think looking across the border, I think there's a lot of experts who have already pointed in the right direction. I think some of it is more of, decrease the admin burden. And some of it is have a think about, how you might want to tax capital gain compared to income. Because obviously you want to tax employees on what they're given by their employers. But at the same time, if you are able to create a lot of value within your company and therefore grow the economy as a whole, then if you get given a share that's worth a dollar or a euro and it ends up being worth 100 euros because your company grows so rapidly, then you are only getting taxed on the capital gains tax on the 99. So that is very, very attractive in most markets, possibly less so in Ireland.
Why do you think that, and I'm kind of putting you on the spot here, why do you think that there is this negativity towards having these kinds of schemes here?
Maybe there's some reluctance around attributing wealth to people who create it.
And why is that? What's the thinking behind that? Like any entrepreneur, they just say, that's what we do. That's my job, create wealth.
Yeah, so I think it's, you know, these schemes tend to encourage startups. I think what is important to realize is that when you are an entrepreneur and you're starting up a company, you take a huge amount of risk and most startups fail. And a lot of entrepreneurs who ultimately become successful actually had a lot of failures and they have to live with them. And there'll be lots of entrepreneurs who will never make the news because they've never had a success. But I think there is, you know, when you do see individuals making a lot of money, then that obviously can create some sentiment against creating inequality potentially. But I do think it is worth encouraging entrepreneurialism. I think normally,
but of course, yeah,
normally
that's why we have a business podcast, is to encourage it.
Yep.
But I am presumed that you're familiar with companies in Ireland, in the Republic, who actually just go across the border into Northern Ireland if they need these incentives. It's so easy. It's kind of a no-brainer. And yet it's not addressed by the government here.
Yeah, and it certainly should be, because for a startup, having a low, you know, lower corporation tax rate is probably less important than having some of those incentives around employee retention, you know, the key versus EMI scheme, around R&D credits, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not saying they don't exist here, but certainly the UK government is, you know, has created and designed some incentives in the UK market, you know, also in comparison to Europe, because we shouldn't forget that places like Germany and discourage employee ownership even more.
I didn't know that. That's interesting. So there must be something. Is it a leftover of some form of socialism or something like that? Yes.
In Germany, it's certainly, I think there's a legal discussion around, because employees, unions are actually part of the board. So by creating employee ownership, you might create a conflict of interest, potentially.
And yet, and this is would always be my argument, if those people working in the business own the business, isn't that the basis of all great socialism, that they own the means of production?
Yeah. So I think personally, you're more likely to have motivated employees. You're more likely to create that wealth. And it's typically, so these incentives are typically designed around improving the valuation of the company. So it's quite holistic in that, you know, you're not just looking at short-term EBITDA, so earnings before interest and taxation.
Well done,
and so forth.
Because we don't use acronyms.
Yes, short-term profits, you're actually looking at long-term value creation, because usually those schemes pay out on exit. So when somebody actually values the company, or when there is an artificial liquidity event, there tends to be an independent valuation around it. So I think that really, if you compare that to a bonus scheme, that's quite often based on profitability of the company, that is, you know, actual versus budgeted, that can create a lot of short-termism. Whereas if you give employees shares and a real stake in the business, they're more likely, especially top management, to make a lot of the decisions. They are much more likely to create long-term value.
And we know what short-termism has brought us, because that would have been the banks and people like that who did a lot of naughty things because they wanted their bonuses paid immediately.
Yeah, no comment. I wasn't here at the time.
I was hoping that you might comment. So get out your grit magic wand and tell me two, three things that the government must, not should, but must do to fix, to make our startup ecosystem better.
So, if you look at it from an employee perspective, you know, thinking about how they can create something akin to the EMI scheme in the UK. I mean, there is a tried and tested formula there that will hopefully create more employee shareholders, which I think will help the startup community, and it'll also help the society economy. I think we would then look at, can we actually get the employees in that we really need to attract? So is there how do we, I think Ireland's doing quite well on that front compared to some other European nations.
But that's because we have the Microsofts and the Googles and all who are attracting in the talent.
Yes.
And so they're hanging around here. They're ready to be plucked and brought into the startup community. Isn't that right?
Yes. But then if you think about it, the likes of Microsoft and Google have a much more cash than any of the startups. So
therein lies the problem, isn't it?
So they will be able to pay a lot of good cash packages, whereas the startups really have to compete on that equity package and the promise, and hopefully that promise will pay off, of actually creating a much bigger company and then creating a much bigger check eventually for their employees, because they take ownership of that growth and value creation.
Now, you have a great title. You have Strategy and Transactions Partner is your title. And as you mentioned there, you are a valuations expert. Where are valuations these days from the highs of tech companies? Have they really plummeted? Or is it one of those things that you don't really know what it is valued at until there is an event, as they call them, until there's a sale or something happens to put a proper value on it? Am I making sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So you've got the public companies. So you mentioned that the big FANGs. Obviously, they are valued every day by investors. Then you've got, and I'll come back to them, and then you've got the private companies, which we're really talking about because startups, scale-ups, private companies until you've got liquidity events. So the public companies, since the heyday of December 2021, so really since the start of 2022, and certainly, you know, after the tragic war in the Ukraine broke out, the Nasdaq plummeted by 30-35%. Interestingly, over the last few months, that has recovered somewhat. But then you look at the private companies and the valuations there that really matter for our startups and our employees that work there. And it's difficult to know exactly where valuations stand because So I used to work with some of the startups and some of the unicorns as well, and say you had a company that specialized in automating processes for businesses, and they didn't need any cash, but investors just threw cash at them, right? So there was a funding round every 6 months, and it gave the employees a liquidity event, and usually it provided, you know, $1 billion extra to the valuation, for argument's sake. And that's obviously a massive success story for everyone. Now you have much less money chasing these startups, scale-ups. Money has become much more expensive. So if you look at the Fed rate, and you're back in December 2021, it's virtually zero. It's now more than 5%. So the change in interest rate has been significant. And obviously that makes cash more expensive. It means that investors are going to want to have cash today rather than in 10 years' time. And, you know, when you're a startup, you tend to not be very cash generative in the first few years. So it is much, much harder and much more expensive for startups to attract investment. And it takes longer. So startups will have a look at that, like in terms of what is my next investment round. That cycle is, you know, significantly lengthened. It also means for employees, actually, that they will not get the liquidity events quite as often.
Which is another big problem.
Yes, correct. So how you can address that actually as a company, you provided you can afford it, which is a big if, but you could introduce artificial liquidity events, you know, for if you have the cash, you could say, well, actually, we're just going to have a look at the valuation today because our company has done really, really well. We don't want investment right now because we think investment might undervalue it. But if you management, you employees, you've bared with us for the last, you know, however many years, you actually deserve to have a bit of cash out now. And so you do a valuation and you cash, or you provide the opportunity for some of the for your employees to say, company, please buy my shares back. You can create that liquidity event.
Okay, well that could work, all right, yeah.
Yeah,
I'll have to think about that one, and about because that Have to think through as to if you start using the company cash like that, does that throw up any difficulties? Is like buying back the stock, the value of the company? I'm not sure.
Yeah, obviously, if you are liquidity constrained, so, you know, you actually, you have only 6 months to run, then you're not going to do that.
You're not.
You're going to try and reserve as much cash as possible. If you feel like your employees are getting, you know, a little bit anxious about...
They're always anxious.
Yeah, well, you know, your employees have invested in you as a startup. So even before... the interest rate, even before the economic environment and the interest rates went up, it was always a risk, right? If I leave a big company and go to a startup and I accept the big equity check, then the risk for me is really doing diligence on the company itself. Will this company go places? If it is going to be a successful company, it's much likely that I will be successful with it, as long as
that's the idea.
Yes. So it was always a risk. Some companies didn't succeed despite the despite the tailwinds around investment. And some companies exceeded, you know, exponentially. But these days, you are going to a startup, or you may have already gone to a startup, and you're considering your equity package and you're thinking, I've not had a liquidity event in 3 years. I don't know what my company is worth. I wonder what I've actually gotten in terms of compensation overall. So that's what but if you don't have the cash as a company, you shouldn't be doing buybacks. What you could do is you could say, look, employees, you know, we can provide you with the transparency around this is where the company has grown to. We think we've actually grown, you know, compound annual growth rate of, we think our valuation has grown by X. And therefore, if we had an exit to date, this is what your compensation would look like.
That is called jam tomorrow, I think, because rather than jam today, because maybes and could-bes and all, very dangerous area to get into. Final question, which we ask all of our guests, and I hope you read the email. Did you look up to see who you would hire in a heartbeat?
Yeah.
Oh, you did. I thought there was a look of terror in your eyes there for a second. So who would grit you on the hire in a heartbeat?
So I would, and that probably reflects on where I was born, but I would hire Arnold Schwarzenegger. And there's a few reasons. One is he's got an immense growth mindset. You know, if you think about it, bodybuilder to actor to politician. He has a strong values, which he's very good at promoting on social media and more widely. His latest Netflix series, FUBAR, he admits that his daughter's probably better at his job or at their job, which is the same than he is. So it could be a good ally in the workplace. Lastly, we are all looking at EY and you know, I think all companies should be encouraged to look at the effect of or the big opportunity that artificial intelligence will bring to businesses. So I am very optimistic about that. But if the AI ever did go malevolent, he's got Skynet on his CV, so, you know, he's perfect.
I also think that I see recently he is not an American citizen, and that's the only reason that he's not standing as president or for president.
Okay.
I think I saw that somewhere.
I'd back him.
There you go. Grit Young, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Dundeal Motors is home to Ireland's largest range of new and premium used cars. That's why you'll find cars from Audi and BMW dealerships on Dundeal. Are you looking for a 7-seater to accommodate your growing family? Maybe you're after a luxury saloon to make a statement. We have the car for you. You'll also find Ireland's largest range of electric cars to help you make the switch. Visit dundeal.ie today to start the search for your next car.
Viscosity. When you shave, you want the highest viscosity because it helps the blade run smoother. DeFacto, the world's best shaving oil, has incredible viscosity. That's why DeFacto leaves your face, underarms or legs nick-free. Higher viscosity makes blades last longer. DeFacto is the best for your skin and your pocket. DeFactoShave.com. It's all go, let Chrissy know on thatgreatbusinessshow.com. That Great Business Show.
And that's it from That Great Business Show, episode 149. Great business insights and inspiration. all thanks to our sponsor, Dundeal.ie, the only place to find your next car, new or secondhand. Sign up for our email updates and for your own personal copy of the podcast at thatgreatbusinessshow.com. And that's where to go if you would like to advertise with us as well. We record here at the Dublin South Podcast Studios, where Mark Carthy is today's sound engineer, while studio manager and engineer supreme, Peter Rice, adds his little touches of magic later. And that's why we are acknowledged as the world's best-sounding podcast. So from me, Conal Moran, buíochas to you all agus slán tomáil.